height of his body. I was fearless, and now I run a finger along the collar of my silk shirt, peeling the material away from my flushed skin. Holy cow! I think I'm having a panic attack. I've never had one, and so I'm not sure if that's what this is, but it certainly feels like it, and I need something to drink. Now, the food and beverages are laid out on a buffet table along the back wall, opposite the glass overlooking the ice rink below. Members of the media with press badges clipped to their shirts walk around with audio recorders crammed below their mouths as they speak in low voices. I don't walk behind them. Instead, I beeline toward the buffet, leaving Gwen to trail after me or be left behind. "Where are you?" she cuts off, releasing a squeal that darts through my skull like pins and needles. "Oh, my God. We have to say hi." Her fingers latch onto my arm again as she spins me around and drags me toward the other end of the buffet table where a blonde is standing. Poor girl. She has no idea what's coming her way. Before we even reach the woman's side, Gwen exclaims, "Charlie, it is so good to see you." The blonde glances up, and there's no mistaking the way her eyes go wide at our approach. She looks on the verge of fleeing, but there's no time. "Hey there, Gwen." The woman's blue eyes flick to me, before landing on Gwen's shark-like grab on my forearm. "Looks like you've made a new friend." By the gods that be, I'm released. "Charlie," Gwen says, "meet our new publicist, Zoe McKenzie. Zoe, this is Charlie Denton. She works for the Boston Globe." I hold my hand out for a proper handshake. "It's good to meet you. Have you been with the Boston Globe for a while?" "A little over a month now. It's still pretty fresh, actually." "She was with the Tribune before." Gwen pops into the conversation as if I should be completely familiar with the newspaper. At my raised brows, Gwen gives a little sigh of disappointment. "I forgot you aren't from here. The Cambridge Tribune was a sinking newspaper. It recently closed down." I look from Gwen to Charlie, then back again. "Is this a good thing?" "Absolutely," Charlie says, drawing my attention back to her. Just before she stuffs a mini quesadilla slice into her mouth, she mutters, "I hated that place. Totally soul-sucking." I have no idea what to say. On a personal level, I can commiserate with her. On a professional level, I have no idea who she is, and the last year has made me wary of reporters. My gaze dips to the forgotten black recorder on the buffet table. "What Charlie isn't saying is that you probably heard about her on the news. Little fun fact for you, Zoe. Charlie here busted an entire story a little over a month ago about me and her boyfriend, Duke Harrison." Gwen watches me, and I have the distinct feeling that this part is a test. "But Charlie is pretty good at keeping secrets otherwise, right, Charles?" The blonde spares Gwen a narrowed look. "You do realize that I've known you for nearly a decade, and you've never once called me that, right?" Gwen purses her lips. "I thought we were friends." "You called me Charlie Sheen 2 months ago." "It was obviously a joke," Gwen tells me in a conspiratorial voice, hand curled around her mouth and everything. "Charlie's still feeling a little hurt about it." "Well," Charlie drawls, dragging another quesadilla off the silver tray, "if it hadn't been for you making Duke see me again, I don't know where I would be today. Thank you for that, but anyway, I'm an awesome secret keeper." Her blue eyes find my face. "Should I turn off my recorder?" "You have it running right now." An itchy feeling catches on my neck, and I briskly rub my palm against it, hating the thought that I'm in a room full of people just waiting to bust open the moaning Zoe jokes again. "Oh yeah," Charlie tells me, tapping her finger against the recorder. "This baby never gets turned off. You have no idea what you might hear up here. I mean, did you know that the GM was messing around with someone? His divorce papers aren't even finalized yet." Over Charlie's head, I exchange a look with Gwen. Gwen, mind you, pulls the least subtle move in the existence of subtlety and runs a finger across her throat. Gwen, the blonde says, twisting around to stare at my boss in horror. You didn't. Uh-oh. I shift backward, intent on escaping. You know, I think I might try to scope out some of those sponsors you were talking about, Gwen. Maybe spend some time convincing them that Andre isn't the devil incarnate. Gwen's hand clutches my wrist, stalling my flight. Body shield, she hisses from behind gritted teeth. My eyes go wide. From her? Seriously? Charlie's hands go to her hips. What's that mean? What are you talking about, body shield? Nothing, Charles. Charlie makes a theatrical show of flicking off her recorder before dropping it into the backpack tucked between her feet. Recorder is away, Gwen. Don't even pretend to play coy. Did you sleep with the GM? Sensing trouble on the horizon, I lift a finger. Can I ask how the two of you know each other? Charlie says, She's my best friend's cousin. At the exact same time, Gwen mutters, I've known her for years, not in a professional setting. That's all the answer I get before they're verbally lunging at each other again. Don't you know how to keep it in your pants, Gwen? Charlie throws out, looking every inch the disappointed mother. Gwen, for her part, rolls her eyes. He's not married anymore. It's called settling on a separation. He's still legally married. He hasn't slept with his wife in 2 years. Because that makes it okay. Charlie shakes her head, and her blonde ringlets sail through the air with the movement. Please tell me it was only one time. When Gwen bites her bottom lip, I decide it's time to make my move. The two women are so caught up in their argument that they barely register the fact that I steal 2 quesadillas from the silver tray for myself and then make my escape. Perhaps it's the hockey gods shining down on me, but at that moment the buzzer kicks off and the announcer's baritone fills the arena.
All right there, who is ready to watch the game of the season?
The crowd goes wild, the sound piercing the owner's box, even with the glass enclosing us. My feet carry me over to the window, and for once, I'm content with knowing that not a single soul knows who I am. As I shovel the remaining bites of quesadilla into my mouth, I keep my gaze trained on the ice below. Aside from 2 specks, which look a lot like referees, the players haven't yet entered the arena.
The Blades are currently 17-23-2 this season.
The announcer continues boisterously.
It has not been a good season for this Boston hockey team.
The crowd appropriately boos, and even a few of the men behind me follow like a pack of lemmings, cupping their hands around their mouths and echoing the boos.
The Philadelphia Flyers are currently the leading team in the division with a record of 38-2-2. I don't know about you, Bob, but unless the Blades manage to pull a rabbit out of a magic hat tonight, it's gonna get bloody down on that ice.
The second announcer, Bob, gives a low, humorless chuckle that revs the crowd into a high-pitched roar. Over the noise, he says,
Don't I know it, Tom, but I think we're going to have ourselves a good one tonight. If number 22 from the Blades manages to stay out of the penalty box, wouldn't you say? Yes, absolutely. At the rate Andre Beaumont is going, he'll have his name scrawled on the plexiglass of the sin bin by the end of the season, Tom. Any idea on what's gotten into him lately? King Sin Bin, nickname aside, Beaumont has always been a hard player. But recently, it's been a different game he's playing. If he keeps it up, he might not even find himself playing for Boston for another season. I hate to do this, but I have to agree with you on this one. If Andre Beaumont can't find a way to get out of his head and back into the game, then there is a very good chance he won't be sticking around for much longer.
As the announcers move on to talk about the other players and their predictions for tonight's game, my brain is hardwired on one person, Andre Beaumont. This is way worse than I thought, and I already thought the situation was pretty bad. It's one thing for him to be messing up off the ice, but for him to be bringing that same mindset to his career, we have a problem. a huge problem that I don't think is going to be solved by earning back some key sponsors.
This is going to be my last season anyway.
His words from yesterday have haunted me all night, and now they push back to the forefront. I hate to put it this way, but it seems like a pretty solid chance that Andre is actually throwing away his career, which is idiotic. Even after our incident last year, he remained a first-round trade pick. The man is damn good at what he does, regardless of his other faults. Wishing that I was down in the crowd, I press my hand to the cool window. The buzzer sounds off again, and then, one by one, the players take to the ice. We're so far up that they appear like little dots circling around the marked arena like buzzards after their prey. I find myself searching for Andre. Back when I worked for the Red Wings, I attended almost every home game. In the beginning, it was only so I could slowly learn the nature of the sport. My mom wasn't a hockey fan, and phrases like deke or icing were totally beyond my comprehension. Ask me what shoes are the must-haves this season, and I totally have you covered, though. But then I met Andre, and slowly, so slowly that I barely even realized what was happening, my attendance at the games had less to do with learning and more to do with supporting my client and friend. I wore his jersey with pride, sitting up in the nosebleeds or wherever I could find an empty seat. I could have easily sat up in the owner's box, but what was the fun in that? Sure, there was food, but the life, the soul of hockey, was found in the hundreds of rows of seats stretching up from the ice. By this time last year, I had fallen into a routine. Watch the Red Wings play, meet Andre by the locker room just before he spoke with the media about the game. Following that, we'd head out and grab late-night dinner before heading home. Or, you know, to our own homes. No kissing, no touching. Just two buddies hanging out and grabbing a beer. Or in my case, white wine. The memories hurt, and I rub my hand against my chest. Heartburn, maybe. I totally shouldn't have scarfed down that quesadilla, and I refuse to believe that I might be feeling anything else, like emotions. I felt more than enough of those last year, and I'm still topped off at my lifetime quota.
Woo ye, Bob, tell me you saw that body check.
Bob, the announcer, howls in delight.
Boy, did I. You think maybe Beaumont is out to play tonight? I just think he might be, Bob. I just think he might be. Let's watch a replay of that, shall we?
I lift my gaze to the Jumbotron, and sure enough, there's Andre bulldozing a Flyers player into the boards. The plexiglass shakes from the force of his hit, and even though I'm watching a playback, my heart catches in my throat at the sight of Andre jabbing an elbow into the other player's ribs as they fight for the puck. Sweat beads down Andre's face, and his black eyes shine like the devil, narrowed and unholy, as he battles for his life. The Flyers player takes a jab back, striking Andre beneath the chin. I physically wince, as though I were the one to get clocked in the face, but whereas I'd end up on the floor in the fetal position, Andre does what he does best. He angles his big body in such a way that he hooks the puck with his stick. With a forceful tug, the other player tries to draw Andre back by his jersey. It doesn't work. In the blink of an eye, Andre escapes the illegal holding. Just like that, he's plowing down the ice, light glinting off his navy blue helmet. With a sharp motion, he draws back and fires the puck toward his teammate. A half second later, the buzzer sounds and red lights key up in the arena. One assist down for Andre Beaumont. If only he played with that much heart off the ice, too. Chapter 12. Zoe. Call me crazy, but I have no idea what I'm doing here. And by here, I'm talking about the fact that I'm lurking outside of the Blades locker room like a total stalker. Thanks to my position with Golden Lights Media, getting past security was a breeze. I flashed my work ID, the security guard gave it a once-over, and with a low grunt, he gave me access to the narrow hallway that looks like something out of a horror movie. Lucky me.
Follow the hall, hang your first right,
the guard told me. Easy, no problem. But now that I'm standing outside of the locker room, it's a bit of a different story. Through the door, I can hear raucous, masculine laughter. The Blades put up a hell of a fight tonight, and it paid off, since they won against the Flyers 3-2. But the laughter and cheering only make me wonder if I'm out of my mind. Of course. Andre will go out with his teammates to celebrate. Of course he's going to think I'm weird for standing out here waiting for him. My eyes squeeze shut and my back presses against the cool wall. "You're crazy, Zoe McKenzie," I whisper to myself. "Go the hell home before he catches you out here." Great idea. Don't know why I didn't think of it sooner. I twist around and barely make it two steps before I hear a female voice call my name. Looking over my shoulder, I guess I shouldn't be surprised to see Gwen's friend Charlie out here, since she's a reporter and all. I fake a smile, hoping it doesn't look pained. "Hey there!" I flash a little wave, already backing up to prepare for my escape. Charlie hooks a thumb over her shoulder. "Did you need to see one of the guys?" she asks, her curly blonde hair bouncing as she approaches me. "They're almost done in there, but someone broke out the vodka, and I can't guarantee any one of them will remember that they were supposed to meet you." "Drunken hockey players? Yeah, that's totally my cue to leave. I thought maybe I should link up with one of my clients before heading home, but if they're partying in there..." "Who are you meeting?" Crap, crap, crap. I fake a slap to my forehead. "You know, I totally forgot that he mentioned we'd just meet tomorrow. Silly me." "Silly me? Who even says that?" "You do, apparently." Charlie's head tilts to the side. "Gwen mentioned that you're working with Andre Beaumont." I'm not sure if that's a question or a statement, and I go with shrugging my shoulders and pretending that pools of sweat aren't taking up residence under my armpits. The longer I stand here, the likelier it'll be for Andre to find me waiting for him. And if that happens, cue the panic for real. "We're teamed up for the interim," I finally say, stealing a glance over my shoulder. "All I have to do is just inch a little bit back, say farewell, and beat a hasty exit out of the rink." Charlie totally doesn't get the hint. "Seriously? You've got to tell me. Is he as terrifying as he seems?" "Worse," I want to tell her. "He's cocky and rude, and there's a small part of me that wishes I hadn't turned down his offer to kiss me in the elevator. Not, of course, that I want him. Okay, maybe I do just a little, but I only want his body, not him. Crap, that's not quite true either." Out loud, I say, "He takes some getting used to." Her brows lift with interest. "And you've gotten used to him?" "I don't think anyone could ever get used to Andre. He's not exactly cuddly." My gaze shoots to the blonde's face. "He's my client." "Yes, Zoe, he's your client. Not that it mattered to you before." But Charlie just laughs warmly. "It was a figure of speech. I didn't think that you were actually cuddling with him." "Right, of course. She doesn't recognize me, and you know what? It feels good. So good that I open my mouth and ruin it all. Yeah, the one time we, you know, there wasn't much cuddling involved." My eyes fall shut at the same time that Charlie claps a hand over her mouth. I let out a groan, and it's pitiful. So damn pitiful. I'm not... "You slept with Andre Beaumont?" Charlie whispers after a moment. But to my surprise, she doesn't sound disgusted. If anything, she sounds intrigued. I open my eyes, and sure enough, she's staring at me as though I've delivered an early Christmas. "I'm sorry," I say, backing up. "This is totally unprofessional. Just ignore me. In fact, I'm going to head on my way." "I'm dating Duke Harrison." The words stop me in my tracks. "Gwen had said something earlier about that." Charlie nods. "Yeah, long story. In any case, Duke and I slept together when I was a reporter stalking him down for a story." "There's nothing for me to do but gape." "Wow, I'm impressed. From what little I know of Duke, the mountain, Harrison's reputation, it's that it has always been ridiculously clean. Sleeping with a reporter? Well, Obviously, there's a reason why they're dating. A blush stains Charlie's cheeks.
Yep, we did it on a hotel rooftop. It was glorious.
That's impressive. Duke Harrison is a legend, both in the looks department and also in the goalie's net for the Blades.
Yeah, well, he's impressive if you know what I mean.
She opens her bag and pulls out her audio recorder. With deliberate motions, she clicks it off and drops it back into the cavern of her backpack.
Okay, you know I'm not recording anything, so you have to tell me everything.
Something about her open expression and friendly demeanor encourages me to do just that. I mean, it's not like I have any friends in Boston, save for Tia, and she has her own friends. I'm the uncool older sister camping out on the couch until I move out.
Well, you don't have to give details, but since the first time I met him, I figured he'd be like, okay, total confession here.
Charlie holds up a hand like she's taking an oath.
I feel like he would be the worst lover in the existence of lovers. He's so cold and stiff.
Before I can stop myself, I mutter,
well, he's certainly stiff.
There's a small pause before we both erupt into laughter, and it actually seems to break the ice. Pun unintended, because the next thing I know, I'm telling her everything. And I do mean everything.
Wait, you did it in the laundry room?
She asks, gasping for air as we sit on the floor 10 minutes later, our backs against the wall and our legs outstretched. I've kicked off my stilettos so my toes can enjoy their freedom.
That's insane.
It was hot, I tell her with a small sigh. Hands down, the best sex I've ever had. Well, until it was over.
And then he went back to being cold?
Or, to use your other word, he went back to being stiff.
Insane,
she mutters again, shaking her head like she just can't believe it. She's a good egg, the kind of person I'd kill to have as a friend. Propping her elbow on a bent knee, she picks at a torn hole in her jeans.
But hey, of the two of us, I think your story takes the cake.
Yeah, well, you're at least dating the guy you hooked up with. I'm back in the same position I was in the first place, with him as a client. It's like Groundhog Day. I swore that I woke up from this dream a year ago, and now I'm right back at it again.
Maybe you should shag him one more time. Do it and be done with him.
She sounds just like Andre. Without warning, the locker room door slips open and the Blades exit in groups. It's a sight to see, really. Hot man after hot man files out. For the most part, their hair is wet, slicked back, and they're decked out in jeans and t-shirts.
You're hitting up the box after this, right?
One guy says, and I recognize him instantly as Marshall Hunt, ladies' man extraordinaire.
Yeah, I'll be there. Another guy responds.
Going to swing by my old lady's house first, though. Want to say goodnight to her and the kid before I meet you for a beer.
Hunt snorts derisively.
Jesus, man, you're whipped. No, I just love my girls.
Yeah?
Then when are you going to put a ring on it, dude?
They move out of earshot before I can hear the rest of the conversation. Beside me, Charlie jumps up, swiping at her jeans as she cranes her head, no doubt looking for her hotshot boyfriend. Time to get out of here. With a prayer on my lips that Andre will be the very last player out of the locker room, I snag the straps of my stilettos and begin stuffing my sore feet back into them.
Zoe?
Damn it! A pair of boots enters my peripheral, and then my gaze is climbing his legs, pausing at the noticeable bulge at his crotch. Don't judge me. And skating upward. I don't make it past his broad chest because his knees pop, pop, as he crouches down in front of me. Black eyes meet mine.
What are you doing here, Zoe?
Setting myself up for inevitable heartbreak, it seems. I drop my head back against the wall in defeat. Gwen invited me to the game.
And you came?
He sounds surprised. Not that I blame him. She promised me that there might be some sponsors around to preach my cause to. But, alas, no one was there. Andre doesn't laugh at my theatrical tone.
That doesn't explain why you're down here by the locker room.
Would you believe me if I said that I had something important to discuss with you?
No.
His damp head ducks as he reaches out to touch my ankle. But my ankle is bare, my stiletto still dangling from my toes, and I feel that one brush of his finger like he's wrapped his entire hand around my heart and not my foot.
How is this?
He asks, not going so far as to tap the bone, though he does apply slight pressure.
Did you put ice on it like I told you?
My breath hitches. I didn't have any.
Your dad owns a restaurant,
he says, his mouth barely lifting into a smile. His eyes, though, gleam with amusement.
You really going to tell me that he had nothing available?
Yes, I lie, shamelessly turning my foot so that he has more access to touch me, if he wants. Shameless. I know. It's bad. Maybe he catches my not-so-subtle signal, because his palm skims my foot and then clasps my ankle. The heat from his hand has my toes flexing, my fingers digging into the floor on either side of my hips. I look up, meet his gaze, and...
Yo, Beaumont, my man, are you coming with us?
The spell, if there even was one, breaks. Andre's hand falls from my foot, and he straightens to his full height.
I planned to head home.
He tells his teammate, a guy I don't immediately recognize from the roster pages.
Get in an early night before we hit the road tomorrow.
Another player comes up beside the first guy and slings an arm around his shoulder.
Don't bail on us, Beaumont!
The man's blue eyes dip to where I'm still sitting on the floor, trying to lace up my heels.
Ah, I see. You have a lady friend for the evening.
Finally, I manage to hook myself back up. I'm struggling to my feet, clutching the wall, when Andre claps a hand around my elbow and pulls me up, which doesn't help my case at all when I say, I'm not his lady friend. Andre's teammates exchange a look.
Yeah, sure,
the first one says.
She's my publicist,
Andre says in a hard voice.
That's it.
If my heart does a weird little squeeze at his words, I do my best to ignore it. I duck my head. I should probably be heading out anyway. Andre, I'll see you Monday. Another voice enters the fray.
Zoe!
Charlie calls out, bouncing over to me with Duke Harrison trailing behind her. I stare at him, a little stunned. He's more attractive in person than he even is on TV. Blonde hair, blue eyes, a solid build that speaks of hours spent in the gym. No wonder Charlie did him on a rooftop. I would have, too. Charlie's hand waves in front of my face, and heat rises to my cheeks.
Why don't you come with us?
She snags my hand and gives it a little tug.
We're hitting up the box. It's a tradition.
Zoe is heading home.
This comes from Andre. Something about his remote, icy tone snaps my back straight. I'd love to join, I tell Charlie. Are you guys taking a cab? Masculine fingers wrap around my wrist.
I thought you were heading home.
Andre's thumb brushes the center of my palm.
Remember?
I slip my hand from his grasp. Sure I do, but Charlie and I are new friends, and it'd be rude of me to say no. I lean forward, waiting until he does the same. Now, aren't you heading home so you can see one of your women? Don't let us stop you.
Jesus, Zoe.
He rears back, scrubbing a hand over his hard jawline. Mouth flattening, he growls.
All right, fine, I'll go.
My eyes narrow on him. That wasn't an invitation.
It is now,
he tells me stiffly. Before I can even get another word in, he adds,
you'll ride with me.
He doesn't even give me an opportunity to say no.
Another round of wine, please?
Charlie shouts 2 hours later. She's seated next to me at the box, which is a hole in the wall if I've ever seen one. Dark walls and dim lighting give off the impression that the bar is smaller than it is. Seated at the end of a long hallway from the main part of the establishment, this area of the box is apparently exclusive only to the Blades and their guests. If we're being honest, it's pretty much a quarantined area for hot-as-hell hockey players. They mosey about this way and that, lounging on couches or shooting pool. Some stick around the bar, talking loudly as they argue who had the better stick play for the evening. One guy comes up to me and, without prelude, begins to show me pictures of his baby daughter. Cute kid, but I still have no idea who he is. One other thing is for certain about the box. The liquor selection is good. Maybe too good. I push my empty glass away with a groan. My skin feels sticky, and my throat scratchy from one too many glasses of Chardonnay. I think I've had too much wine. Charlie waves away my worries. One more, she sing-songs, before tapping me on the nose, with the kind of familiarity that comes from bonding while being tipsy. Do you really want to go home with Andre right now? At the mention of him, I twist around and find him seated with some of his teammates at a table. Poker chips are laid out before them, and empty tumblers litter the table. Even though I can't make out his expression, I have the sneaking suspicion that he isn't focused on the game. He's watching me. I sigh. Probably because he feels responsible for my safety. On the way over, he said, no less than 3 times, not to trust any of his teammates.
They're all cold motherfuckers, Zoe. Unless you want to wake up tomorrow morning alone and naked, I'd suggest avoiding them.
Something tells me that he's the coldest motherfucker of them all, excuse my French. In my attempt to get a good look at him, my butt inches a little too close to the edge of my bar stool. There's a split-second moment where I'm convinced I'm about to go sailing to the ground, my arms pinwheel, hands searching for purchase. At the very last second, I catch myself on the bar, just as I see Andre lurch to his feet, like he's prepared to come to my rescue. How cute. I offer him a 2-finger salute and turn to Charlie. I have a problem, I announce.
Do you?
Charlie scoots her butt around on the bar stool so she's facing me.
Tell me.
I'm not sure. She pats my hand consolingly.
You'll feel better.
Well, it's just... My hand gestures in the air frivolously. How do you teach someone to be more... open?
Like emotionally? Charlie asks, studying me carefully. Girl, you're speaking to the choir. Duke is like a clam.
She darts a glance over her shoulder and then whispers behind one hand.
Don't tell him I said that. He's doing much better, and I don't want to ruin his progress.
That makes me smile. She and Duke are the kind of couple you can't help but love and hate at the same time. He was quick to purchase her a drink, and just as quick to press a kiss to her forehead and murmur,
"Have fun with your friends, sweetheart,"
before heading off with the guys. Like I said, cute. Andre Beaumont isn't cut from the same cloth. Snagging the stem of my wine glass, I swivel around and slouch against the bar. Swirling the wine around, I take a small sip and wait for the man I'm watching to notice me. It doesn't take long. Andre's chin jerks up, as if sensing my stare. For a moment, it's like no one else exists in the box. I sip my wine, and he mimics my move, wrapping a hand around his tumbler and drinking what I know is likely to be a whiskey and coke. I don't break eye contact as I primly cross one leg over the other. He doesn't break eye contact as he says something to the guys at his table and then scrapes his chair back. Neither of us breaks eye contact as he draws closer, his long-legged gait eating up the distance to my bar stool. As he does so, an idea brews in my head. It's perfect, perfectly ridiculous, and when Andre stops in front of me, I burst, "Where's Marshall Hunt?" Andre's brows furrow, and an unnamed emotion darkens his gaze.
"Excuse me?"
I peer over his shoulder. "Marshall, is he here?" There's a small pause, and then,
"He's in the back, I think."
"Brilliant! Will you grab him for me?"
"Will I?"
Andre cuts off, downing the rest of his cocktail in one smooth move. He plants the glass on the counter by my elbow. and he's so close that I can smell the sandalwood off his skin.
You know what? Fine. I will go get him.
I smile brightly at him. I'll be here waiting. Though he looks on the verge of strangling me, he gives a curt nod and stalks away. Beside me, Charlie leans so far over, I worry she might topple from her stool.
You're baiting the lion,
she whispers, in a voice that's not at all a whisper.
Do you know what you're doing?
Not at all, I tell her truthfully. I am what some would call flying by the seat of my pants, but I wait anyway, making small talk with Charlie and the bartender, until a sullen Andre comes strolling back toward the bar, Marshall Hunt in tow. Up close, Hunt looks just as American golden boy as he does on TV, light brown hair, indeterminable colored eyes in the muted barroom. He's big without being massive like Duke Harrison or Andre. When Hunt meets my gaze, the corners of his eyes crease with humor, and he leans in for a kiss to my cheek.
I heard I was summoned,
he says,
though Beaumont here wouldn't tell me why.
Andre says nothing, and Marshall Hunt visibly shudders. Yes, this will be perfect. I take another long pull from my wine, then pop the glass back on the bar top. Turning back to the men, I say, that's because I didn't tell him. Marshall, I've heard you're a bit of a player. His eyes go wide. Andre thumps him on the back.
Hell,
Hunt mutters after a moment.
Warn a man before you catch him off guard.
Sorry, I say without being all that sorry. No, this is perfect. He is perfect. My point is that you're a ladies' man, but the ladies love you. The media loves you. You're like a unicorn. Andre lets loose a groan.
I think you've had too much to drink, Zoe.
Softly, he presses his inner wrist to my forehead, as if checking my temperature. It feels... well, damn it. It feels quite lovely, actually.
You're hot.
Charlie leans over, one hand outstretched for a high five. You got that right, Beaumont. Our Zoe is beautiful. Andre slides her a hard glare, and I leap at the opportunity he's presented me. Batting his hand away, I announce, see? That look right there. You have to stop scaring people, Andre. This is why Marshall is perfect.
Because I don't scare people,
Hunt asks, his voice sounding every shade of confused.
Should I be insulted?
No. In the far, far corner of my brain, I realize that I've had way too much to drink. But whether it's the wine or the fact that for the first time in months I'm hanging out with people my own age, I feel happy, even if I am earning myself a spot on Andre's mile-long shit list. Pressing my shoulders back, I say, Marshall, I need you to teach Andre how to be the kind of guy everyone loves.
Jesus, Zoe.
No surprise on who says that, but I ignore the man simmering beside me. This is for the greater good. Andre's greater good. Andre, pretend that Marshall is a woman you're hitting on. For a moment, there's only silence, but boy, is it substantial. Hunt comes up sputtering from his beer. Charlie keels over the bar, rolling with laughter, and Andre turns to me, his dark brows drawn when he growls,
are you serious right now?
Yes, I tell him. Charlie and I will be the judges, right, Charlie? Beside me, Charlie throws up her hand to order another round of wine. I take her silence as the confirmation. I fold my arms over my chest, trying not to wobble too hard in my seat. We'll be the judges. Then once you've gotten it exactly right, we'll head up to the front part of the bar and let you loose on real women.
I'm gonna need another fucking beer for this,
Hunt mutters. Less than 5 minutes later, we're all in position, and sure enough, we've gathered a crowd of eager onlookers. Duke sits behind his girlfriend, his hand clutching Charlie's on top of her knee. A few of the other players have pulled up chairs. The poker game forgotten in the face of watching Andre make a fool out of himself. The chalkboard that sat behind the bar now sits in my lap so that I can tally the number of times Charlie and I feel as though Andre has done something right. Clapping my hands together loud enough to end the chatter, I say, "Okay, our first round will begin. Now, Andre," I point a green piece of chalk at him, "you've just walked into a bar and noticed our beautiful, lovely lady right here. What do you do?" Andre cuts a glare at Hunt, who is now fully invested in the scheme. He presses his chin to the tops of his clasped hands and flutters his eyelashes outrageously, making his teammates roar with laughter.
"Find someone better looking,"
Andre grunts. "Wrong!" I make a bzing sound with my teeth. "Try again." With a little sigh of defeat, Andre pinches the bridge of his nose.
"I would walk up to her."
"Baby steps," Charlie says. "Very good, baby steps. Now, if you're doing this as your regular self, what would be your next step?"
Andre doesn't have the chance to defend himself. One of his teammates, Jackson, I think, points his beer in Andre's direction.
"He'd ask if she had a boyfriend or a husband."
My nose scrunches. "You ask that? That's the first thing you say?"
"It's not..."
Breaking off, Andre rakes his fingers through his hair.
"I don't say that every time, but sometimes it helps to know whether I'm barking up the wrong tree. It saves time."
"Because all you want to do is get into her pants?" With a shake of my head, I look over to Hunt. "What do you do?" Marshall Hunt seems only too pleased to offer his take on picking up a girl.
"Well, it's a bit of a science, you know. First, I try to get her attention, see if she's even interested. Then, once we've been staring at each other for a bit..."
"Did you have to choose fucking Romeo for this shit?"
Someone shouts from the back of the bar.
"We'll be here till morning."
"Dude,"
Hunt shouts back, pointing his finger at where the voice came from.
"She asked. Don't be jealous that you get laid once a year, McDermott. The only stick of yours getting action lately is sure as hell not the one attached to your pelvis."
Everyone laughs, throwing up beers and cocktails in a toast.
"Fuck you, Hunt.
You're not my type, McDermott."
With that, Hunt turns back around, his handsome face once again a mask of pleasantness.
"Anyway, now that we've got McDermott's virgin status out of the way, what I was saying is that I make my move slowly. It's methodical. I want this woman to know that I'm coming. Let the anticipation build and all that. When I finally approach her, she's practically begging for me to sit down."
"Huh. That does sound very methodical, which I suppose is the reason it works. Even just sitting here, I'm feeling a little turned on by Marshall Hunt. It's his eyes, I think. Now that he's closer, I can see that they are pewter gray, slightly mysterious, but open and guileless, unlike Andre's black-as-night gaze that hints of unspoken secrets. I reach out and poke Andre in the side.
"What do you say to that?"
"I think I'm in my own version of hell,"
he tells me, lifting his whiskey and coke to his mouth.
"You seriously want me to play this up?"
I meet his gaze. "I want you to be nice." His mouth flattens and the emotion in his dark eyes turns unreadable. Have I hurt his feelings? I wouldn't think it possible, but from the way he stoically sets his tumbler beside me, maybe I have. It's on the tip of my tongue to apologize, to blame the wine, but then his fingers wrap around my bicep as he gently tugs me off the bar stool. The chalkboard goes to the bar top.
"Fine."
Releasing me, Andre steps back, already turning toward the door. Over his shoulder, he says,
"But you're my target, Zoe, not Hunt."
My sloshed brain realizes that this is a bad idea. A very, very bad idea. "Andre, what do you mean I'm your target?"
"Exactly as I said."
He twists around but doesn't stop moving. He casually walks backward as if arrogant enough to believe that nothing will trip him up.
"When I come back in here, I'll be coming straight for you. Be prepared."
Just like that, He walks out of the box. I think I may need another drink.
Chapter 13. Andre. I'm going to fucking regret this. Zoe McKenzie has been a thorn in my side for 2 years. She was a thorn when she was my PR agent back in Detroit. She was a thorn when she wasn't even in my life and all I had was the memory of her to haunt me every night. And now that she's back in it, now that we've come full circle, like the last year of radio silence never even happened, she's driving me crazy. Every last rational thought in my brain is telling me to walk out of the bar, to go home and get my ass to bed before I do something I'll regret. But the irrational part of me, the part of me that doesn't care about professionalism or emotional boundaries, wants to storm back into the bar and prove that Marshall fucking Hunt doesn't have what it takes to satisfy her. I do. Only I do. And just like that night a year ago when I kissed her like it was the last thing I'd ever do, I'm tempted to pull the repeat and do it all over again. That night a year ago, it sure felt like my life depended on her kiss. On her. And right now, I drop my forehead against the door that leads into the exclusive area of the box and inhale sharply through my nose. I shove aside the ridiculous slice of disappointment that she doesn't want me. She's smart on that score. Damn smart. Unlike me, the king of bad decisions, she's making a good one by choosing a guy who isn't running from his own shadow. Zoe will always be better off without me. Not that she ever realized that fact. She's the woman who'll bring you Advil when you're hungover. The kind of woman willing to shoot the shit over a game of pool. The kind of woman who'll make you forget your own name. The kind of woman who doesn't need to be dragged down by excess emotional baggage like mine. Curling one hand into a fist, I push away from the door. She wants me to be nice? She wants me to be like Marshall Goddamn Hunt? Done. My fingers grasp the doorknob and yank it open. I force myself to slow my gait as I enter the back room where my teammates are waiting for me to make a damn fool out of myself. Any other day, and I'd give that to them. But not tonight. Not when the woman I've been dreaming about for a week straight wants me to be someone else. "Here he is, ladies and gents," Jackson, a left wing, hollers from the bar. "King Senbin." The nickname rubs raw. While enforcers in the league are certainly a dying breed, the stigma hasn't quite faded. Goon. Meathead. Impulsive. Only the impulsive bit rings true for me, and it's something I've worked on over the years. Think before you drop gloves. Think before you smash a guy into the boards. For the most part, I'm leashed tight on the ice, only breaking into a fight when the situation calls for it. Still doesn't matter. Guys see me coming for them and they immediately turn tail. My reputation for having a quick temper and even quicker fists precedes me. My mouth twists. If they think that I'm terrifying, then they don't know shit. But Zoe isn't scared of me. Against all odds, the dark-haired, dark-eyed girl from Detroit chooses to push me instead. She never stops. She never quits. It's what drew me to her before, and it's sure as hell what attracts me to her still. One taste will be enough. Yeah, right. When it comes to Zoe McKenzie, I'm running myself in circles trying to keep to the plan, to stay out of her lane. I zero in on her seated at the bar. As usual, she's decked out in a form-fitting skirt and a top that makes her look like she's got bigger breasts than she does. Her legs are crossed demurely at the knees. She looks pristine, despite her tipsiness. Pristine and oh so innocent. The innocence is a lie. She lifts a brow, as though daring me to come forward. The lanes blur, becoming one. Just one taste. I school my features, force a casual smile to my face as I saunter toward her. "This stool is taken," she tells me when I step up next to her at the bar. My eyes narrow on her. Doesn't she realize she's playing a dangerous game? My foot hooks the wooden rung, and I tug it away from the bar anyway. "Is that so?" I ask, voice low only for her. "Girls' night?" Her gaze darts to Duke's girl and then flits back to my face. "Yes." I'm sure they won't mind if I steal their pretty friend for a few, eh? Without giving her time to argue, I take a seat. My elbow rests on the bar, my hand hesitating dangerously close to the curve of her breasts. She sucks in her bottom lip, and I feel that one breath all the way down to my cock. "Celebrating anything tonight?" I ask. "A birthday or a promotion?" My thumb brushes the fabric of her shirt. "Maybe an engagement?" For a second, so brief I can't be sure it happened, she presses into my touch. She's definitely wearing a padded bra, not that I give a shit. Back in Detroit, I never had the chance to see her fully naked. Not the top half of her, anyway. And since I've always been a bit of a breast man, it's my turn to suck in a deep breath. What would she do if I leaned in and kissed her? Same as the other day in the elevator, probably. I deserved the rejection, even though I hadn't meant to insult her. But then she arches away, her attention skirting past me to my caveman teammates who are watching us. She leans in, crooking her finger. Her breath is hot on my ear when she hisses, "Don't do that."
"Do what?"
"You know what." "Do I? Maybe I'm totally reading her wrong. In the elevator, before she jumped away, she'd wanted my touch. I know it. Maybe it's the fact that we're in front of the Blades. Understandable, as they're a bunch of assholes and I am her client. But they're all two sheets to the wind right now, and I doubt they'll even remember this little episode. Another thought hits me, and this one packs quite the punch, not in a good way. "Am I not acting enough like a gentleman for you, Zoe?" The words came out huskier than I intended them to. "Not living up to the charming hype of Marshall?" She rears back. "You're not even trying. You just waltzed over, used your sexy voice." I feel a grin pull at my mouth. "I have a sexy voice?" Zoe promptly ignores me. "This is your problem," she rages, fisting her hands in her lap. "You can't bother to drop the macho act for even 5 minutes. It's all, I'm too much of a badass to be vulnerable, or emotions are overrated. Newsflash, Mr. Beaumont, not everyone is an emotional ice block like you are." I freeze, just like the ice she accuses me of being. My vision blurs. Images I don't want to see. Memories I don't want to recall. No one realizes that I've been living in a self-made penalty box for years now. Since Hannah walked out on me. Since I gave in to the temptation that was, and still is, Zoe McKenzie. And when I take a desperate, steadying breath, I act strictly upon an impulse formed by anger. I wrap a strong hand around the back of her neck, gently tugging her close until our lips are nearly touching. Her eyes are wide and blinking rapidly, and I take advantage of her momentary silence by adjusting my grip, cupping her face, gently caressing her cheek with the pad of my thumb. "Is this why you didn't want me to kiss you the other day?" I murmur softly, skimming my gaze over her features. "Because I haven't spilled all of my secrets to you?" I take her chin, shifting it up so that I can press my lips to her neck. She shudders under my touch. "Do you want me to tell you my fears and my worries? Rip open my wounds so that you can take pride in healing them? In healing the big, bad Andre Beaumont?" I release her chin, drop my fingers to her collarbone where I peel her shirt away from her skin and dust another kiss to her neck. "Is that what you want, honey? What you've always wanted?"
"Yes,"
she breathes out, her eyes squeezed shut.
"Yes."
I don't think she even realizes what she's said, and, with an acute pang, I know that I've taken this too far. The jeering from my teammates is quieted to crickets. My heart thunders in my chest, an identical twin to Zoe's pulse leaping to life beneath my palm. The part of me that's been craving her presence, her spirit, her, for a year, demands that I apologize for my asshole behavior, for exposing her like this in front of strangers or even potential future clients. Fuck, fuck, fuck. I pull back at the same time her pretty, dark eyes peel open. There's no hiding the embarrassment swirling in their depths, nor the hatred. I am the worst kind of asshole.
Fuck.
Zoe, don't touch me. Her voice is a quiet crack in the otherwise quiet bar. Don't! Her lids slam shut, her chin turning away.
I have to go. I have to go right now.
I reach for her purse off the bar. I'll drive you. She gives a sharp shake of her head.
I don't want to go anywhere with you. You bastard!
Little does she know that's a more accurate term for me than she could have ever chosen. Bastard. Asshole. Cold. I've heard it all. To be balls-to-the-wall honest, the words don't bother me when it comes from the general public. But falling from her lips, it's a sharp knife to an already festering wound. Tears bloom, turning her eyes bloodshot red. Another stab. This one right to the heart. Let me drive you, Zoe. We can sit in silence. We don't have to say a single word. Just let me take you home. Let me atone for my sins. Whether it's the fact that we're currently the center of attention or something else, she agrees with a short, barely there nod. It's all I need to rise from the stool and to quickly pay our tab. In silence, we walk out of the box side by side. None of my teammates reach out to fist bump me goodbye, and not a single soul gives even a short wave. They know I've gone too far this time. Hell, I know I've gone too far this time. I meant what I said, though. If she wants to sit in silence during the drive to her parents' house, that's what we'll do. She steals in front of me as we exit the dark hallway that leads into the main area of the box. But instead of moving to the front door, she swivels unexpectedly and struts straight over to the bar. I catch her as she two-finger salutes the bartender and orders a vodka and tonic. What are you doing? My voice is low, because I have no interest in attracting the attention of the bar's patrons. While the box caters to Blades players all day and every day in the back of the establishment, the general area of the bar is not our scene. There are puck bunnies galore, all hoping for a chance to slip into the rear and into one of our beds.
Zoe!
Dark eyes snap in my direction.
What does it look like I'm doing, Mr. Beaumont?
On any other day, I'm a diehard fan of her sass. Today it worries me. It looks like you're drinking to forget something. She touches her finger to her nose as though indicating you got it.
You'd be correct on that.
I shouldn't ask. Doesn't mean I don't, though. What are you trying to forget? Her gaze leisurely eats me up. She pauses at my mouth, and I'd be lying if I said that one look doesn't turn me on in five different ways. I can still recall her taste as vividly as though I were kissing her now. And I can sure as hell remember what it felt like with her legs wrapped around my waist and her nails biting into my back. I lost myself in her that night. Drowned my emotions and the memories and all of the fear into the feeling of her body moving against mine. Zoe's gaze leaves me completely. As she plucks her tumbler of vodka off the bar, she murmurs,
"You, Andre. I'm trying to forget you."
My stomach lurches. This woman, she's the only one who can wreck me. One reason of the many that I've stayed away from her for so long. My life in the last year and a half has been nothing but turmoil, and I don't need more. But neither does she need my drama. Let me take you home, Zoe. I pull the tumbler from her hand, returning it to the bar, far out of her reach. You're going to regret drinking so much in the morning. Her dark eyes are pure fire when they touch on me.
You don't have a say on what I do with my life.
I know.
If I want to do 5 more shots, I can do that, too.
I nod slowly. I know. She heaves a sigh. I don't really want to do 5 more shots, though. This time, I stay quiet, giving her time for the anger to dissipate. Our standoff feels like it lasts minutes, but probably only exists in actual seconds. She rises from the stool. Gathering her things, and without a backward glance to see if I'll follow, she stalks out of the bar. But I do follow. I'm hot on her heels, wishing that I could notice anything besides the tight curve of her backside and her slim skirt. Does she recall the way I removed her skirt a year ago? So slowly that by the time the material hit the floor, she was begging for me to take her? I do. I remember every last bit of that night.
Where did you park again?
She asks, pausing just outside of the box's front door. You don't remember? She bites down on her lower lip in consternation. I'm drunk, Andre. Enough said. Clasping her elbow, I steer her the opposite way to where I parked 2 blocks over. In her defense, she doesn't wobble on her heels. The street is dark thanks to a lack of working streetlights, and the farther we walk from the box, the sounds of life become muted, too. By the time we make it to the car, there's only the sounds of her heels clipping against the